You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. In our worldview segment today, I talk about the inconsistent cultural stance on suicide in America, and for our main topic, homestead project planning. On today's worldview segment, I want to discuss suicide. As many of you are aware and have been watching on social media, the tragic story of Brittany Maynard's is very popular right now, and it's her decision to go ahead with suicide, and she even has the date planned, November 1st. And this is actually being celebrated across social media and across the culture. Now, let me be clear. Her situation is horrible. I can't imagine the pain and the anguish caused by this cancer. Her particular form is, I think it's a brain tumor. And I cannot pretend to be in her position nor speak on how hard this must be on her family. Although I can tell you from a personal experience, having watched a loved one suffer from cancer, it is very tragic indeed. However, what I want to speak on today is her basis for her decision to take her own life, and how this relates to a Christian worldview. What she is doing and what our culture is doing is celebrating suicide. She is basically a martyr for self-destruction. Like I said, she's being celebrated left and right on social media as brave and courageous and selfless. And this is what the culture is telling us of people who are choosing this option in her case. And it is very tragic indeed. And when we look at suicide across the board, it's almost like the culture is being inconsistent, and they certainly are being inconsistent. When we looked at the whole Robin Williams thing, they told us that it was not his choice, that it was depression, and that therefore we cannot say that he made his bed, he made his choice, that kind of thing. But in this case, they're saying, yes, she is making this choice, and that is good. And so we're very inconsistent in this way, and we fight it. And having just retired from the military, this is a huge problem in the military and as a whole of suicide. And we try and prevent it, and we approach all of these problems. The secular world view only approaches these types of problems in two ways. They simply apply more education, or they apply more government, namely both, and both fail because they do not address the underlying worldview problem. In the case of Brittany Maynard, again, she's celebrated as courageous and selfless, and I want you to think about something. It's very important. Since the culture of death celebrates her decision on November 1st to take her own life as courageous and selfless, what does this say about the cancer patient who doesn't choose this option, who fights until the very end, who struggles with this and clings to life? Well, by the logic of the euthanasia worshipers, this cancer patient who fights until the end would be cowardly and selfish. Think about that for a minute. If we are to celebrate as courageous, as selfless, the person who chooses death, then are we supposed to also think of the person who chooses life with cancer as cowardly and selfish? That would seem to make sense according to their worldview. But certainly that is not true, because we know from a Christian worldview perspective that all life has inherent worth and dignity and value, even when suffering. Now, do people really think that? Are they going, if you ask the average person that's on Facebook and celebrating this, even those that proclaim Christianity, because they are also saying this is such a great decision? Do you think that they would say that about the person who struggles to the end, who fights till the end? No, of course not. They wouldn't. Because what they don't realize is that they are engaging in moral relativism. And that is our culture. That really sums up our culture, among other ways, but certainly moral relativism comes into play. You know, the reality is in our culture, everyone does what is right in his or her own eyes. And as Christians, we need to look to the scriptures to give us guidance. Calvin talked about the three uses of the law, and I'm talking about the moral law of God here. He said that it was a mirror to help us understand our need for a Savior. The law is used as a moral restraint for our good and for the good of society, and how to live in a way that is pleasing to the Lord. As Christians, we need to defend life, not just in the womb, but also at the end of life. But today we see a culture that devalues life in the womb, and therefore it's natural for that same ethic to pour forth at the end of life. It is a denial of the Creator and an embrace of secular humanism. Romans 12:2, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. We are to think biblically, not what is acceptable in our society. Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. He is the creator of all life. Genesis 9:6. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made man. Exodus 20:13. You shall not murder. God gives us an objective moral standard, and although we have a hard time determining what that is, it is how we should live. And you know, the final takeaway is this: God is God, man is not. For our main topic today, we're going to talk about homestead project planning. Okay, this is a topic that, not so much homestead project planning, but project planning or just planning in general, I have extensive experience in. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at that, in the Marine Corps, whether it was planning operations, training events, individual missions, etc. So Dwight Eisenhower said, plans are useless, planning is indispensable. This is a very important thing. I want to break this down for you because it's true in many ways, but let me explain. So do I think plans are useless? No, I don't, especially when it comes to homestead project planning. They're very important. He was talking in a military context, giving us the idea that, hey, look, plans, military plans specifically in combat, do not survive first contact, and therefore you need to be flexible from them because the enemy gets a vote. And the fact that planning is indispensable is absolutely true. Just thinking through a problem allows one to really understand what it is that you're going to do or trying to do. So while I love that quote, plans are useless, planning is indispensable, it is definitely true in a military context, and it certainly has applications even for homestead project planning. I'm sure you've all done projects around the house. I've done a lot of projects around the house, whether we, you know, owned homes or did whatever. And I'll give you a quick example. When we lived in North Carolina, I built a pretty extensive deck off the back of our house. It was a two-tier deck. It had a pergola over the top. It had built-in bench seating, etc., you know, with rails, the whole nine yards. But I'm gonna be honest with you. I kind of winged the planning aspect of that. And I probably made 20 different trips to Lowe's over, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or however long it took me. But the reality is I just didn't plan it out very well. It turned out fine, but my planning was lacking at that time. Or I think that I just, you know, knew that I was only a few miles away from Lowe's, a 10, 15-minute trip, so no big deal if I didn't get everything I needed. Well, guess what? We live a little bit out in the boonies now. We can't make a quick trip to Lowe's from here. It takes us all of 45 minutes one way to get to Lowe's or Home Depot or something like that. The beautiful thing, though, is that we will eventually be able to get wood from our own land. We have lots of it here on 40 acres, and there are several of my neighbors, within a few miles that I'm sure process their own wood. They have their own mills and things like that, and I definitely want to get there soon. But again, today, homestead project planning. Now, there are many ways to plan a project. Okay, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you, oh, there's one way. I mean, honestly, if you just sit down and really think through it and talk through it, that is a method of planning. Now, I definitely recommend getting something down on paper and putting something together, because again, planning is indispensable. You could use the Marine Corps planning process to plan a project. You could use, Six Sigma's method of planning projects if you're a Six Sigma black belt. There's many different project planning certifications and all that kind of thing. Those are more geared towards your business applications, is where you're going to be pitching projects. You're going to be working with a team. Now, you will be working with a team on a homestead, most likely, or even if it's just a couple of you. It could be you and your wife, or you and your wife and your kids. Whatever the case may be. So there's many ways to plan. So what I'm going to present to you today is not the be all end all. It's just one way of many. The whole idea that projects cost more and take longer. All right, let's discuss this, because in reality, this is how it usually goes. This is how it usually goes when we do projects at our home. This is usually how it goes in business, or even in the military. When we do estimates on costs and things like that, we usually go over, and it usually takes longer, or we don't get everything done we needed to in the time that we have to plan it. But in reality, that's just a lack of planning. It's just a lack of planning. Now, there are certain things, unforeseen events, that come up, but having to make it the 20th trip to Lowe's is not one of them. And having to go back and, oh, I needed more screws than I thought, is not one of them. You should know and be able to plan out. It's like, okay, I need about approximately 8 screws per board. There's 20 boards, et cetera, and come to a number, maybe add 10%, and you should not need to go back for something like that. So, cost more, takes longer. Although it's true in our application, it doesn't need to be so. So we need to really step up our planning, and in the end, we'll be better off for it, because what we do is that gets us a better estimate up front. Okay, so what I want to do today is just walk through just a few really basic steps with you, and I want to use my property as a guide. I'm going to share with you our project plan. Not all of it, but the kind of just the big picture on it. And so the first thing I think that it's important to do is that you establish goals. Establish goals and objectives. Okay, what am I trying to accomplish with this project? Okay, and let me just define that real quick. A project is nothing more than an operation that has a defined beginning and end. Okay, it's a whether it's building something, implementing something, et cetera. It just has a defined beginning and end. So that would be a project, as opposed to just a regular a task in a workday. Okay, so you establish goals and objectives in a project plan. Now, what a helpful device for this for us is to make sure that our goals are SMART goals, and that's an acronym, SMART, and it stands for specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely. Okay, so that's taking those goals, not creating some lofty goal. It's something that you can nail down. It's not, I want world peace. That's my goal. Well, that's not specific. It's not measurable. It's not achievable. It's not realistic. And it's not timely. Okay, but something like, I want to implement a food forest on the tiers in my zone 2 area within the next 3 years. Okay, that's specific, that's measurable, it's achievable, it's realistic, and it's timely. I put a defined time on it, and I know that it can be accomplished. Now, it's going to be hard work, and it may not be fully productive by then, but it'll be fully established. Okay, so I need to really lay that out. So that's the first step, is determine the goals and objectives of what you're trying to do. Okay, and it's even helpful to walk through these steps on a very simple project. You can do it. It doesn't matter if you want to plant a flower bed. Walk through this. What is it that you want to achieve in the end? If your goal is to establish a perennial flower bed, then, well, there's some things that go into that. You can't just go to Walmart and buy stuff that looks good right now, put it in the ground, and then think about, well, what I really want from this. Okay, so this applies to a simple project, helps you walk through these things. The next step would be to establish what are the deliverables. Okay, and there's different ways of saying this. So some people are familiar with work breakdown structure, so a WBS in the project planning world, that's more common. Or just tasks, so laying out the tasks that are required to get to those goals. Okay, and there's many ways to do this. Okay, so if you're not sure exactly how to do this, here's one method. So let's go back to putting the deck in the backyard example that I used with you earlier. So you could say, okay, well, let's see, I know I need tools, I know I need equipment, and I know I need labor. Okay, and so say you're going to do it yourself. It doesn't matter. You lay out these things: tools, equipment, labor. All right, and think of this on a line. So you got tools, equipment, and labor. Think of it on a whiteboard. Okay, so tools, equipment, labor. All right, tools. Now you go back from that. Okay, what kind of tools do I need in order to have all the tools for the project? All right, so then you think through what type of tools you need. You need a circular saw, you need hammers, you need a nail gun, screwdrivers and some wrenches for lag bolts, things like that. Okay, so you list those all out. All right, so now you start to get this thing. Okay, you got your goal, build the deck. What do I need to build the deck? You got these lines coming off, build the deck. I've got tools, I've got labor, and I've got materials. Okay, so materials, what do I need for materials? And then you list that out. Okay, what materials do I need? I need the lumber, I need the lag bolts, I need the screws, I need the nails, whatever it is. And then people. All right, this is where you need to really think through this. How long is this going to take? How many, call it man hours, are required? And if I think through this and go, okay, that's going to, I really am estimating, I'm thinking through this problem, and I think it's going to take me 24 man hours. Well, that could be you as an individual working those 24 hours. And then how long is that going to take? Can you do it in 2 weekends? Or if you bring over 3 of your friends and the 4 of you, maybe you can do it all in 1 day. Or maybe it takes you 2 days. That kind of thing. So you just really need, that's one way to think through these deliverables. The other way is you can just sit down with someone and just start listing out the tasks that need to be completed. Okay, just laying out the tasks using the flower bed scenario. It's like, okay, we need to make a trip to Walmart. We need to buy the compost and the seed or the plants or whatever it is you need. I need to make sure that I've got enough hoes and shovels and rakes and et cetera, et cetera. So you just list out all the tasks from start to finish, everything you can think of. Put it away, go away. Come back after some period of time, and I guarantee you'll think of more tasks that need to be done. Okay, so that's one way to do it. And then really kind of tied into that is this next step, which is coming up with a schedule. And again, a lot of that's going to be okay, what are my limitations with regards to work, with how much time, and again, if I'm going to do it all by myself and I estimate it's going to be the 24 hours of work, well, can I really put in, if I think, oh yeah, well, I'll just put in 12 hours on Friday and 12 hours on Saturday, no problem. Well, be realistic with yourself. Say, understand that up front. You know what? It's going to take, I'm going to be able to do this, but it's going to have to happen over 4 days. Okay. So be realistic, because otherwise you're going to get into a it took longer and cost more. Okay, so the goal here is to be on time and on budget. Okay, so that's the schedule, determining that schedule. Supporting plans would be the next step. And this is where maybe it's a materials list that you're actually going to go to the store with. This is the budget that you come up with. This is maybe sub plans if you have a large project and you have to basically break it down into smaller projects. So these would be the sub plans, all those kinds of things. If you have multiple people working on the project, it could be who's responsible for what. That's very important. If you're on a homestead and it's going to be maybe you have people helping you on the homestead. And I'll tell you, we have plans to have interns come here next year, either short term, long term, that want to learn the type of things that we're doing. And so maybe there's 10 people working on large projects, and I'm going to share with you here in just a minute, because we have a large project going on here. It's exciting, but it's a lot of work to be done, so it's important that we plan this out. I've done a lot of planning, but I need to revisit it all the time, and there's a lot of sub projects in our overall design plan. So those are just some real basics on homestead project planning for you. So you establish your goals and objectives. You come up with deliverables, so your work breakdown structure, your tasks. You determine a schedule, and then your support plan. So it's your budgeting, your materials, etc. Let me just say a quick word on budgeting. You can do this in a couple different ways. You can start with the budget in mind, and that's sometimes that's just realistic. And you go like, "Hey, look, I've got $5,000, and that's all I've got for this project, so I'm going to know that up front so that when I determine what it is that I can do, it's realistic." Or you can start with the overall thought, the overall design, the goal that you have for a particular project, work all the way through it, and then when you come to that number with that budget at the end, you go, "Okay, this is what it would cost if I was able to do it the way I want, but I only have this, so now I need to go back and take a look." But again, all that planning is indispensable. So I actually recommend that you figure out what you want to do, plan all the way through it, determine a budget, apply your actual budget, and then go back through and remove some things or tweak things that gets it back within your abilities at the time. Because there's worth in that planning. So if you just start and go, "Look, I've only got $100, so I'm just gonna look at it like that," you're not thinking through the whole design, because there may be some things that you want to do that you can tweak, even with a smaller budget, that allow you to add on later. So in the long term, it's less expensive. So please keep that in mind. So what I want to do now is just quickly, with that framework, walk you through our budget for our property. Now, for one of my businesses, Resilient Property, you can find that at resilientproperty.com. What I do is I do analysis and design and implementation for it on a case-by-case basis for property. So I'll take a look at a property, conduct analysis on it, give an overall design. Based on the client's goals and objectives. So again, just like I walked you through it, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm walking through clients through basically a project plan. I come up with a design and then give them the plan, and it's up to them to implement it unless they want to hire me to do that as well. But mainly what I do is do analysis and design. So I help them get that plan in place so that they can start moving on their property to obtain their goals. So let me just share with you some of our homestead objectives. And again, our farm, or our homestead, is called Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm. That's what we're calling our homestead, our 40 acres up here in North Idaho. Okay, so I'm just going to go over a few. There's more here, but I just want to give you a taste of this. So one of our goals is to be self-sufficient to the max extent possible for 20 people. Okay, now, I know that's a little bit vague, but when you're talking about a huge overall plan, it's hard to be ultra-specific, okay? So when I say self-sufficient to the max extent possible, well, I can't create everything out here. I'm not going to be able to make salt, for example, out here, things like that. So obtaining total self-sufficiency is not realistic. Building community and being able to trade with a small community is realistic. So that's part of our plan as well, but that's an aside. And I say that is that, you know, if we have a lot of people here already, and that's because we have a lot of kids. But if other people were to come onto the property, we could easily get to the number 20, even if it was for a short period of time. Our second goal is to train others towards self-sufficiency. That's part of what this podcast is about, and it ties into some of our other businesses as well. Provide multi-generational livelihood through property production. Okay, so that's getting into, hey, you know, we want to provide our kids a means that if they want to be involved in the businesses that we're starting, they can. Or if they want to start their own businesses, what Joel Salatin calls fiefdoms, on our property, whatever the case, if one of our kids generates a strong interest in breeding rabbits, for example, or something like that, and can start their own business, that's great. Okay, so that's one of our goals. And then the next one is provide a demonstration site for multiple permaculture principles and concepts. Okay, so with that in mind, that's kind of our overall objectives. And then we have, remember, we said that the deliverables and the timeline. So let me share with you ours. So I've got this broken down into a significant Gantt chart. If you're familiar with the Gantt chart, it's just a way of breaking out a project planning. For those of you that have military experience, you probably can think of what I'm talking about, or even in the business world with your Gantt charts and that kind of thing. So I've got it broken out into all of the major tasks that need to be completed, and this is all combined on a timeline. All right, so, and because it's so extensive, I had to break it out into phases, and actually I borrowed from my military planning background. It's broken down into phases and stages, all right? And the overall timeline is about a two-year timeline, all right? So in 2 years, I hope to have all of this implemented. Now, some of it will still be in the stages of work. You can't get certain trees to grow in 2 years and things like that. So, but all of the implementation done in 2 years. I've got it broken down into four phases with various stages underneath them. Underneath each one of those stages is a series of a lot of individual tasks. Okay, so I'll just share a few with you. All of the major phases, I've got it broken out into, three phases. I'll just cover that. So the phase one is what I'm calling initial actions. All right, and that's basically me getting out here 2 weeks ago and carrying us through a period of time that's about roughly 4 months. Okay, so basically through into the end of January of 2014. So roughly that amount of time. All right, so initial actions. There's things I need to do right away. One of those subtasks under the stages, for example, was to plant in zone 2 on our terraces. We have a couple of terraces that were cut into, because we're on a slope, into the front of our house, was to get some trees in the ground, some trees and bushes in the ground, before they go dormant. All right, and I'll do a show on that on some day, that fall planting is actually very good for trees and bushes. And what it does is it allows the leaves and everything above ground to kind of slow down, and the nutrients to be concentrated in the roots, helps establish the roots, etc. So it's a good time to plant or do transplanting with bushes and trees. Not so much for seed and those kinds of things are more for springtime. Anyway, so that was one of the things we wanted to accomplish when I first got out here, and that was under our phase one actions. Okay, so that was just an example. Then we have many, many more. Phase two, which really starts February 2015, broken down, and I'll just kind of cover this one, broken down into three stages. Stage A, infrastructure, is we're going to be doing some rainwater catchment. We're going to be building a sauna. Then the sauna is a multifunctional dwelling that's powered by a small wood stove or rocket stove. It'll also be used for drying of food, so dehydrating food, and also like an outdoor shower. So we have that sauna, we have a rainwater catchment system, expand the permanent fencing, establish our rabbitry, because we want to run rabbits, among other things. I even have in here an assessment period. And so that is assessing some of the things we're doing, especially from phase one. So all the things that we're putting into place over the next 3 or 4 months, I have an assessment period built in to see how those things are doing, really evaluate, see if we need to make any tweaks to this overall plan. And then we'll move into stage B, which is what I labeled earthworks. So in our earthworks stage of 2015, which goes from about springtime through the fall of 2015, it's establishing swales and ponds. So this is where we're going to need to bring in heavy equipment. We're going to be digging some ponds, establishing swales, establishing hulgaculture beds, and we also want to do a wallapini. A wallapini is basically an underground greenhouse, or I say underground, it's partially underground, so kind of below the frost line, is allowed to really, really extend your seasons. Even out here, when it gets really cold, there's snow on the ground, we should still be able to grow food in things like a wallapini. We're going to be establishing chicken tractors on some of our property and things like that. And then another assessment period built into that. And that brings us to stage C. It talks about stage C is what I labeled energy. Okay, so that's we're going to be doing a small solar system and a small micro hydro system, if feasible. Again, we have to do a lot of these are major projects in themselves, and will require further planning before we start them. But as you can kind of tell, this is how you would a way to really phase in over a long period of time, major elements, so they make sense. And this was not only was this built in as certain things had to be completed before others were started, but it also took into account the weather and the seasons, etc. And then that brings us into phase three, which is maintenance and expansion. So, and again, I'm not going to cover all the stages under that, but I just want to give you an idea of what we're doing out here. A lot of projects coming up, so I hope you'll continue to listen with me. They're going to be very interesting, and I've also got all this budgeted out, and I've got it written out, so we'll see how well I was able to do as we go along. But again, if you could take each one of these things that we're going to do, and it's a project in itself, so it's going to require further planning, but what I have laid out is a framework, a time period, a methodology, and a sequence in order to implement these plans so that they make sense. And that covers our main topic for today, which is homestead planning. I hope you got something out of it. Our scripture for today comes from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce, Then your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will be bursting with wine.
That's the podcast for today. Don't forget to visit us at thecourageouslifepodcast.com. Please leave us some comments and questions. Also, like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.